by the listeners of WEFT and Paramount Painting. Paramount Painting brings quality interior and exterior painting services to the area with over 20 years of combined experience. They specialize in prep work to ensure the finished product is of exceptional quality. Chris and Dave are family men who enjoy supporting their community. Reach them at paramountpaintingplus@gmail.com or at 217-530-1086.
WEFT 90.1 FM, Champaign, Illinois. Welcome to CU Progressive News, bringing the many voices of your community. The views and opinions you will hear in the next hour are solely those of the speaker. They do not necessarily represent the views of this station, the board of directors, staff, or anyone affiliated with WEFT or Prairie Air Incorporated. This program is produced in the studio of WEFT at 113 North Market in beautiful downtown Champaign, Illinois. We are indebted to the members of WEFT who have for 35 years provided the infrastructure for independent media in Champaign-Urbana.
Got a jam-packed show for you today, so I gotta go quick on this. Some events from the weft.org/progressive calendar. So NITSA, the 7th Art Stand Screening Number 2, is happening Tuesday, May 9th from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Art Theater Co-op in downtown Champaign. The 7th Art Stand is a nationwide series of films presented by movie theaters and community centers around the U.S. as an act of cinematic solidarity against Islamophobia. The Art Theater Co-op is participating in offering 3 specially curated film screenings Tuesdays in May. On May 9th, starting at 7 p.m., they will show Sonita, a 2-time Sundance Film Festival Award winner. Sonita tells the inspiring story of Sonita Azizadeh, an 18-year-old Afghan refugee in Iran who thinks of Michael Jackson and Rihanna as her spiritual parents and dreams of becoming a big-name rapper. Also happening on May 6th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the IMC at 202 South Broadway in Urbana is going to be the last Open Scene event. Open Scene will be holding their final showcase and discussion to conclude the project funded by a $50,000 Art Town grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. They will reflect on what they have learned from a series of 4 artist workshops they recently hosted. They will listen to youth leaders about what they imagine for the future and the independent media at the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. And they will also be holding an auction where they will be selling a lot of really cool art, so definitely check that out as well. Let's get to the show.
So I'm speaking with Blair mm-hmm. Smith.
Yeah.
And in my questions, my preliminary questions that I sent you, mm-hmm. I know that I had, what is your involvement with Open Scene Second? But I think we should start with that because I'm not sure what your involvement with Open Scene is. So do you want to just give me a little insight on that?
Yeah, sure. So I am program coordinator with Open Scene, working with the Independent Media Center and the City of Urbana. So I was hired as a part of the grant to sort of coordinate Open Scene project this year.
Oh, cool. So do you want to give me a little overview of what Open Scene is?
Yeah. So Open Scene is the NEA grant project in collaboration between the Independent Media Center and the City of Urbana. It's a grant project that they applied for sometime last year, and its goal is to reimagine the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana, wider Champaign-Urbana community. Reimagine the spaces, how we can bring young people together, adult members who support youth media arts projects, and see how we can have conversations to reimagine the Independent Media Center and sort of move that space forward, and also reimagine different spaces downtown. So yeah, that's a quick, I guess, overview of the project. With the project, the goal, and what we did with the workshops was to work with four different artists. Some of them were groups, and work with artists, learn, their different skills, and also have conversations about reimagining the space, in the space. So each workshop took place at the Independent Media Center. And with each workshop, we were, I know we'll get more specifically into, the different types of art we work with, the different types of conversations we had. But the goal has been to, again, like I said, just reimagine the Independent Media Center in downtown Urbana. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's awesome, and it makes a lot of sense to have that in our community. What doesn't make sense is that this is the first project like that that I've heard about happening in our community. So
right.
it's just wonderful that, you know, something like that got going through the Independent Media Center. And so you had a series of four artist workshops. Do you want to kind of get into the details of those, what kind of artists you brought in and what the workshops were like?
Yeah, so we had actually had over like 50 applications like nationwide of artists who, you know, wanted to work with us on this project. But we started on four different artists. Our first artist was Derek Lindsay. He's a local musician. He's worked with Prince, amongst others. But he's a local musician here. He gave a workshop on music production. We had conversations about the music industry, about like would it be to start a record label or a studio in the Independent Media Center? Like, what would it take to build like a home studio? What types of sound? You know, what are the sounds of Urbana Champaign? Like, what do we hear? I know somebody mentioned, you know, there's like a sound of like coming and leaving here, you know, like the sound of people like coming and leaving this being like a very, you know, a place where people kind of come and go, like, you know, thinking about what all of those things mean. It was a very awesome workshop. And just also, I think, you know, with the artists that we chose, we really wanted to think about artists who work in this community, who work with young people, who are committed to Independent Media Center as well, doing work there. And Derek is an artist here locally who's worked with young people. Another group of artists that we brought, Mother Nature,
yes.
We also worked with them last summer. They did a series of workshops about the miseducation in hip-hop. And so he participated with them. So we really wanted to get people here, you know, and really sort of cultivate and have conversations too about the histories here. You know, you just have so much knowledge about, you know, music and sound and making music here, which I think is dope. And so, yeah, that was an amazing workshop. Our second workshop was with Andy Perkins, who is based in Chicago, the native artist whose artist is around storytelling and using Native and Indigenous practices to do so. And so in that workshop, we work with Andy to create stories. So stories about, you know, our family histories, you know, histories of growing up in Urbana-Champaign, our dreams, whatever we wanted to sort of, I guess, tell a story about. And we created a art piece to help tell that story. So some people told stories about, you know, their grandmothers. Some people, you have one of our youth participants who plays sports, you know, his art was just telling a story about his teammates, you know, like he painted and drew like a basketball court in like the different places he had been, you know, while playing sports and what that means to him. That was amazing workshop. And also, I thought it was amazing. I think another thing we tried to do, too, we have a few participants who identify as Native and Indigenous, and I thought it was a great space to sort of center even just the history of this area, Native land, and what that means to have even a conversation about what it even means to be on Native land and honoring that space. So, yeah, that was Andy Perkins. And then our third workshop was with Mother Nature, mm-hmm. you know, local goddesses, you know.
Yes.
Mother Nature's just awesome. I think, you know, the great thing about them is that they already have working relationships with a lot of young people in the community here. And so it was great to have them back and sort of have a continuation of what they did with the workshops this past summer. And so they did a continuation. Miseducation of hip-hop. I really, what I like about all of the workshops, too, and I think what really, you know, is coming out through all of them, too, is just being able to have intergenerational conversations, right? So, you know, we had a conversation about our first experience with hip-hop. You know, we had some young people in there whose first experience with hip-hop here in Urbana-Champaign was a Mother Nature concert, or, you know, coming to their artist talk on Friday and mm-hmm. it was their first time being to a hip-hop concert. You know, like, what does that mean? You know, we had the mayor come on their Sunday public event, you know, engaging in activities around, you know, Mother Nature had an activity where we listened to a particular song and we're different, maybe like five different emotions on the wall, like, you know, this know, this song makes me feel excited or powerful. You know, they play a song and then we sort of move and gravitate to those different emotions and have a conversation about those things. So, like, I don't know, you know, I'm thinking about what it means to even create a space where the mayor, somebody retired can come in and have a conversation about their experiences with hip-hop. Just even what that means to even reimagining that space and I guess the potential for how it can bring our community together. That was Mother Nature. They also hosted, which I thought was just a dope continuation. They are part of their miseducation workshop, which I really feel like, to be honest, their workshops, you know, last summer just provided a good template for, you know, ways that we could sort of organize open scenes. So they had like a good vibes only fest that Monday after their workshops that, you know, brought, you know, all of the young people that came out, you know, to freestyle. We had a bunch of different cyphers, you know, young people just coming in to freestyle with Mother Nature. You know, they were able to come out again and it was at PFM. They were able to come out again and just enjoy themselves. And so that was a dope space. And then our last workshop was with Hello Waters and Lisa Faye. Hello Waters is a collective duo. They have some history here in Champaign. They're both graduates of education in the education department and work closely. I don't know if you've ever heard of Soul Hot, Saving Our Lives, Hear Our Truth. It's a space organized by Dr. Ruth Nicole Brown and others here. It's a space to reimagine Black girlhood creatively, organizing collectively, which I'm also a part of too. But yeah, so they sort of bring their artist skills coming from Soul Hot, that experience, but also just them working their duo. They work together and do theater based ensembles, and also travel and, you know, organize with others, creating community based ensembles and having community dialogues. And so with that, they had us asking just a lot of dope questions about like what we want, like what are our histories. We created this big, huge timeline of like arts, community arts events that took place in Urbana-Champaign. That was another very intergenerational conversation. So, you know, you had like stuff, you know, in the timeline that happened before I was born or even gotten here. You know, people, you know, some of the young leaders are, you know, artists and, you know, putting out different projects. They're able to like put out the first time they, you know, released a project. You know, was it the first time you, you know, been to an event at the Independent Media Center? A lot of the young people are already organizing arts events and already using the Independent Media Center to do so. You know, being able to see that, see it on a timeline was just an amazing experience. I think also, you know, I think the important part about Hillel Waters and Lisa Faye's conversation too, is, you know, really just focusing on the histories and sort of bringing that forth as we reimagine and think about what we want in the present, right? So, you know, we have to know, like, where we've been to really get to where we really want to go. And so that allowed us to really think about our histories, how we connect, and, you know, how we can use those important factors to move forward. So, yeah, those are our four workshops. We have, like I said, we have our final showcase coming up on May 6th. And we're going to use that space to just talk further, create, have conversations, perform if folks want to do that, and think about how we can move open scene forward with the people that we have. There are also a lot of amazing, different projects coming out of open scene, the participants already. Jamie Gatson, who's a youth leader with open scene, he's actually working with the Independent Media Center to build a studio in the basement. So that's in the works. Another one of our youth leaders is planning, she goes to uni high school, and she's planning a showcase kind of day party to kind of keep open scene going and keep those connections going. A couple of other adult supporters with the project, Cher Robinson, she works with Seat Cafe, which is a space, a spoken word poetry space for young people. She's looking to get that going in the IMC. So, yeah, a lot of things are sort of brewing, and so we really want to have this final showcase just be an opportunity for folks who weren't able to come to the workshop, come hear about them from the people that participated in it, you know, see some of the things that we created, add to the timeline, have conversations, network, and really see how we can continue seeing, you know, regardless of funding or what have you. So, yeah, I know you have more questions. I know I just said a lot.
No, it's very apparent how passionate you are about this project and about Open Scene and what it's doing for the community, how it's inspiring and empowering all the different people who have attended the Open Scene project. And so I was just wondering, did you have anything like Open Scene in your youth? Was there anything that you participated in when you were younger that you drew from when you were designing the programming for the Open Scene project?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate it. I mean, well, I definitely, you know, rest in peace to my mother. I'm surely grateful for her. You know, she had me in programs doing all types of stuff, regardless of whether I wanted to do it or not. But when I think about those spaces as a young person, you know, that really, I don't know, just, you know, allowed me to cultivate me and get to know myself, I think about Open Scene is that, I don't know, personally as coordinator, I know my focus to, because, you know, to be honest, it's a lot of work. I think a lot of unanticipated, you know, work too. And I think that's just the nature of doing things like this. But, you know, another one of my, you know, focuses too is just working with and getting to know the young people, like really listening to them, really, really being with them, getting to know them. And, you know, when I think about myself as a young person in those spaces that, you know, I feel like I was able to really grow, it was a space where I was able to be myself. It was a space where I was able to talk about those things that bothered me, a space where I was able to be, you know, some of the youth leaders, like, you know, they apply because their mom told them that they should apply. And I think there should be a space for young people like that, too, who are, you know, the range of young people is also 16 to 24. So you have some people who are high school students. You have some people who are just young working adults. I mean, even that's sort of like an intergenerational aspect. But yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. I just think of spaces where I can just, you know, be. I see Open Scene as that. I see it as, you know, being that for the young people that have been able to participate and be a part.
That's fantastic. And so you've talked about how, you know, not even just the young people attending these workshops have benefited so much, but also the people running the workshops have been inspired to create new projects. And a lot of it seems to be enabled because we have the Independent Media Center to hold all this in. So how has having a space like the Independent Media Center helped Open Scene?
Man, I mean, you know, this is it's a placemaking grant. Right. And, you know, I'm also thinking about, you know, I'm from Virginia. I lived there, you know, most of my formative years, and I attended graduate school at Syracuse University. I moved here in 2015, and I've honestly never seen a space like this. You know, I've never seen an independent space whose focus is really the community, however complicated it is, because it's not messy. You know, I think, like I said, I think it's the nature of doing community work. But to have a space like this, to have a stage space, an art space, I mean, there's so many different things coming out of the Independent Media Center. But to have a physical space to organize and to be a space who, you know, is really, really committed to social justice, you know, but especially, you know, thinking about the young people, mostly, you know, young people of color, too. You know, we're housed right across from, you know, the Champaign County Police Station, the Sheriff's Department, you know, creating that as a space, knowing that, you know, they may come up in there, I mean, which has happened, and try to shut stuff down or try, you know, like they're, you know, a space that is committed, like I said, to social justice, committed to speaking up against racism and all of these things. I mean, I think that's crucial. Yeah, I think it's surely beneficial, and I've never been a part of anything like it. I don't know.
It's true. No, yeah, I think that's great, and it's truly something special for our community. And so, Open Scene, it's only been around about a year, is that correct? Since it started. And so that's not the longest amount of time. Have you heard much of a response from the community at large outside of the Independent Media Center? And do you feel supported by the community? Do you feel like the word has gotten out there and that the community really has the back of Open Scene?
Yeah, I feel like this has sort of been a slow process. And I mean, I think that might be for various reasons. I mean, I definitely see the support You know, even if people aren't able to physically make it out, you know, people still, you know, if people make donations online, you know, people support in various different ways. I mean, I think one of our goals, too, moving forward, I mean, which I think is, I don't know, maybe difficult, I guess, post a lot of the programming, you know, portion of the project, is mm-hmm. to just keep getting the word out regardless. So, you know, doing promotional things, going, you know, going to city meetings, also getting the word out more. I definitely like to see more support from the Public Arts Council if possible. But I think, you know, I also think, you know, again, the nature of a project like this is that it takes time to get the word out as well. I mean, and you know, you're going to have people that don't support. I mean, I haven't really heard much of that. But, you know, I think for the most part, there's been a lot of support, you know, a lot of people who want to see the project move forward. I mean, a lot of definitely the same people, but again, I think that's the nature of it too. But if you want to buy those too, it's just to keep getting the word out, you know, in the best ways that we can.
Well, that's all really cool. And so you've got one more event coming up for the mm-hmm. Open Scene, and that's May 6th at the Independent Media Center in Urbana. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about that event?
Yeah. So we're having our final showcase. It's also going to be an art auction featuring art from Langston Houston, who he locally born and raised artist. He's not here at the moment, but I don't know if you're familiar with the Good Vibes Only mural. I don't know if you've been in the Independent Media.
Yeah.
Actually, that was created actually as a part of the Miseducation of the Hip Hop Workshop series.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he created that with young people that attended that workshop. But he's donated several awesome pieces, Black Lives Matter art protest pieces. I can't remember, Brian Dolliner, who's our program director, is working more directly with the art option. So I don't know, you might want to reach out more to him if you want more information on that. But he's donated a lot of artwork. We're going to have an auction. Also, our goal, we need to raise $5,000. We're at about $1,500 right now and still just really pushing. So this is an effort to raise money and also, you know, just to share local art, you know, and also have that be a part of the conversation and moving forward. Well, also at the event, you know, we're going to share. We're going to have slideshows. We're working with Goldie. She's a local photographer, and she's been taking amazing photos and videos. We're going to share photos, slideshows, videos, some artwork. And we're also going to have conversations, you know, jostles, if you will, about how we can move forward. So what are those events that we're already planning for the summer? Like, what visions do we have for the summer? What's manageable? You know, what can we do? What do we want to see? How do we want to use the space? Maybe it's having, I don't know, maybe it's having workshops where a local artist come, you know, every month, mm-hmm. you know, just really laying down some sort of practical things that we can do moving forward. And to just get more, I think this is also a space, too, like I said, to get more community members out, get more city folks out to be a part of the conversation and support, you know, support us moving forward, even if that's, you know, Jamie starting the studio, having a conversation about that, like how do we want to, imagine and envision that moving forward, even as it takes time to build, you know. So what do we need, you know, what type of equipment do we need for that? So, like I said, you know, really listening to the youth leaders who who participated in these conversations, who created, who are still creating, and want to use the space. Lateef Bridgewater, he's a youth leader and an awesome artist. He makes amazing beats. You know, he wants, you know, to see the space be more open to having young people just being able to come in and create beats. You know, how can that be a part of the studio or be something separate, you know? These are just, I think, just asking more questions and, you know, really putting some of those things into action. That's the goal of the final showcase and our option.
Well, that's really cool that you're taking so much time to learn from the community and the participants of the Open Scene to try to see how you can help it grow and make it better and turn it into new things. So once again, the last Open Scene event of this series, of this run, is Saturday, May 6th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Urbana Independent Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, and that's at 202 South Broadway in Urbana. And
Just one more thing I want to talk about. So the open scene was funded by a $50,000 grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I try to stay away from that big orange monster as much as I can, but I have heard him saying that he's going to be trying to make some cuts to the National Endowment for the Arts. And
right.
So are you worried about funding for future projects like the open scene? And what are things that the community can do to help secure the future for things like the open scene?
Yeah, you know, this is, I guess, also it's not really a tough conversation. I mean, you know, I guess coming from also, I think, organizing from SoHi, I think we're one of our biggest things, not that we don't, you know, ever rely on some type of funding to create what we need to create. But another thing that we lean on is each other, you know, to get what we need to get, and to know that we always have what we need. So I don't know. I think funding, I definitely think we're in a particular moment with Trump. I'm surely not negating that. But I think grants, that industry, trying to work to get funding for nonprofit organizations is just a hustle and a danger in general, right? There's always, I feel like there's always a danger of losing some type of funding, regardless of, you know, who's president or not. I think one of the things that I'm learning too, through the young people, and the people that I've been able to meet, through the project too, is again, you know, we make it happen too. You know, if we need to bring food to an event, like we can make it happen. We need to bring our resources together. We can make it happen. If we need to donate money, like we can do that. It's happened time and time again. And I think that's again a goal for the May 6th event too, is just to get people out, think about ways the community can support beyond, you know, the National Endowment for the Arts. The city of Urbana too has also made generous donations and support financially. I mean, they're funding most of what the NEA is giving us for the project. So, how can the city continue to support, you know, financially? And maybe it's not a $50,000 grant, but what are the ways that we can sort of pull our resources together, local resources together as well, to push the Independent Media Center forward and to continue to have the types of events and projects that we have come out of it.
Well, that's awesome. I like what you said, we can make it happen.
Yeah, we all we got.
That's right. And so is there anything else that you wanted to say?
No, I think I'm good.
Awesome. So Saturday, May 6th, 2 to 5 p.m. at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center at 202 South Broadway in Urbana. Come out, check out Open Scene, see what's been happening the last year, and see what we can do for the future.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Blair. I really appreciate it.
Who are you on Instagram?
I'm Kasey Cacophony, by the way. I'm sorry. I should have said that.
You are listening to the weekly pre-recorded program, CU Progressive News. CU Progressive News is a collaborative effort. We are asking you to be a part of our collaboration. We need assistance for news readers, news gatherers, writers, researchers, fact checkers, calendar coordinators, and production assistants. Training will be provided, no experience is necessary. We also welcome stories. Whether you have an hour a week or an hour a month, we welcome your participation. Email wefp90.1@gmail.com to give us feedback, story ideas, or to find out how you can be a part of CU Progressive News.
So we're recording, and I'm speaking here with Sunny Ture, who's an organizer with Black United Front UIUC. And so I just want to start out by, you want to let our listeners know, what is Black United Front?
Yeah. Hello, everybody. And Brian, you know, thank you for having me on.
No problem.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. The Black United Front is a political coalition of Black students at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. We started coming together early last semester and have since organized ourselves into the Black United Front UIUC. And we seek to, you know, be that political voice for Black students on campus as far as, you know, issues that affect the entire Black student body that need to be organized around, you know, issues that need, you know, a grassroots type push or as much as can happen on a college campus, you know, we seek to have Black United Front be that space where that happens at.
And unfortunately, it seems like the University of Illinois is creating a lot of issues for Black United Front to confront. And so do you want to tell me a little bit about Project 1000?
Oh, for sure. When we start talking about Project 1000, I always think it's good just very quickly to reference Project 500. Project 500 was the 1968 administrative plan, you know, alongside the Special Educational Opportunities Program that they put forward right there in the wake of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., you know, while that racial tension or that resistance to, you know, the system of white supremacy when it was at its height, you know, and on this campus that translated into, you know, the campus listening finally to Black demands, the Black outcry for justice, and, you know, doing something. But unfortunately, you know, it turned out to be mostly symbolic, you know, by the early 1970s. And we could, you know, talk a lot more about 1968 and Project 500, but, you know, just to keep it moving, by the early 1970s, you know, you already have Black students at UIUC complaining that the administration is not holding up to their Project 500 promise. And, you know, those type of you know, failures on behalf of the administration have continued for decades, each decade, until the present moment, to where, you know, still Black students make up less than 6% of this campus, yet we make up 15-16% of this state, 17% of the Illinois public school system. So Project 1000 is the updated revival of a movement, but this time, you know, for Black students, by Black students, to, you know, demand something different, a Black student-led campaign, formed campaign, to by 2020 bring 1,000 Black students in each incoming class, you know, every single year. And even that, it's just a note with Brian, even that, Project 1000 carried out for, you know, a decade straight, still wouldn't get us to equitable numbers. So again, Project 1000 is just a small step in the right direction.
And I understand that the Black United Front is creating an advisory committee to ensure the success of Project 1000. And so who will be a part of this committee, and what are the goals of this committee that Black United Front is forming?
Right, right. So just very quickly to reference Project 500 again, mm-hmm. one of the biggest critiques that we as Black United Front, or really just analysis of that we have of the previous movement, the 1968 movement that BSA, the Black Student Association, put on, was the fact that they did not achieve any power to see to it that their demand for increased Black student representation and retention was sustained even after that first group of organizers left campus. Actually, what had happened was, you know, even though BSA, as popular organization it was on campus at that time, could mobilize hundreds of people for protests, for rallies in support of their demands, what the administration ended up doing, and this is a thing that, you know, systems all over the world do, is they'll invite you into their spaces, you know, where they have power, where they have bureaucratic power, where their power matters. You know, you can come into our committee, BSA, send one representative. You know, even though your movement represents hundreds of people, thousands of community members, please come in and send one representative that has one vote to represent your interests, you know, on a board or a committee where the interests of the interests that oppose sometimes or most times the interests of the Black community are, you know, dominant. So, yeah, with Project 1000, what we seek to do with this advisory committee is to start forming a space where students have equitable power. You know, if the ideals of education in this country are what we, you know, well, at least what we think that they are to be, but or you know, if they were what they should be, I should say, just to cut to the point, you know, then students would have an equitable say in their education, would have an equitable power in their education, or at least would have, you know, equitable assurance that, you know, their needs are going to be met, and the needs of each individual child, each individual student. Yeah, with Project 1000, with the advisory committee, like I was saying, we just see this as a space where students can have equitable power, where students, you know, so as far as the makeup of the committee, we have the chancellor, people from housing, admissions, financial aid, and also representatives of the Black United Front take part. But also I just want to point out for all the listeners that Project 1000 is a living document. It's not a static document. So these are things that we work through on a monthly basis, you know, trying to refine them and make them better. But the key part to all this is that push for equitable control, equitable power, you know, instead of just letting, you know, rich white folk run everything.
Yeah, for sure. And so along with the enrollment and retention of 1,000 black students, also looking for adequate funding and support for the Department of African American Studies and the Bruce D. Nesbitt Cultural Center. And it seems like the opposite of that is taking place right now. Do you want to talk a little bit about Turn Up for Turner?
Oh, for sure. So just to reference 1968 Black Student Association again. So those student activists coming, you know, out of the late 60s, early 70s, what they were pushing for locally as well as across the nation, you know, was, you know, institutions on college campuses, like, you know, cultural centers or intellectual institutions like the Department of African American Studies. They were pushing for these institutions because they know that their communities needed institutions if they were going to be truly supported, you know. And so they got that across enough at least to get them created. Mm-hmm. But even at this campus, you know, we see, you know, as far as African American Studies Department, it's taken decades before it was funded and loved enough by this administration, by the state government, to be allowed to grant degrees. You know, as far as the cultural center, it took decades for that cultural center to be given an adequate location to be able to serve students in any type of, you know, equitable way, any type of way that was, you know, representative of at least what the university is saying, you know what I'm saying, as far as inclusion, as far as diversity. You know, these words just ring hollow when you see continued, you know, underfunding of these institutions. So, yeah, I mean, just fast forward to today, we see these same problems. Now, while these institutions are definitely in a better spot than they were in the early 70s, late 70s, they're still underfunded, you know what I'm saying? They're still being stripped of power. Now, while this university claims to support increased black student representation and recruitment, at the very same time, they're stripping resources and, you know, and personnel away from the institutions that serve black students. Now, those two things can't occur at the same time and both of them be true. You know, logic teaches us that. So, you know, that's why we're making a stand right now with Turner for Turner. So right now they're trying to take away the academic advisor position in the Department of African American Studies. In the academic department, they're trying to do this. And we see in other universities, in the University of Illinois system, you know, they've already shut down Department of African American Studies. So while they're saying this is just a budget thing and that, you know, this is just a transition type thing, you know, we know that's not true. You know, they're trying to shut down this department, you know. So we're making a stand. You know, this whole community needs to stand with us and demand that they keep the academic advisor position at the Department of African American Studies on campus and that Mr. Luke Turner keeps his job. You know, that's the only thing that we could call justice in this situation. You know, generations of, you know, theft from this community and, you know, from our institutions being underfunded, you know, and this campus community has made very clear to this administration, to Dr. Ronald Bailey, the department head of the Department of African American Studies. We've made very clear our stance on this, and I think it's time they listen.
Yeah, and it's not occurring in a vacuum either. It's occurring at a time when black students have received invitations to lynchings, nooses have been hung on doors and found around campuses, and so to defund services that serve black students at this time, while also saying that the school is trying to serve diversity and equitable education for all students, it definitely seems like a lot of hypocrisy. What kind of strain and what are the consequences of eliminating a position like Lou Turner's as curriculum coordinator for an advisor for the Department of African American Studies? What are the consequences of losing someone like Lou Turner?
Well, the direct consequence, the almost immediate consequence, is you would have African American Studies majors and minors who would have delayed graduation and who possibly wouldn't even graduate, at least not with that major. You know, now, we were in a meeting with Dr. Ronald Bailey during our sit-in. He came in to a meeting, and he said that even though students were telling him that, you know, this position of academic advisor is vital, is the cornerstone of my experience as a student in this department, and he heard almost a dozen students in this one meeting, and there were other meetings, in this one meeting, he heard almost a dozen students relate this to him. And he still tells this, you know, this crowded room that, oh, and I'm paraphrasing here, oh, I think that department will be just fine with that academic advisor. This is what I think. You know, this is the type of leadership we're dealing with nowadays, and it's ridiculous. You know, and that's why we're calling on the community to stand with us, to both incompetent leadership in the Department of African American Studies and incompetent leadership in the UIUC administration. If you can't understand why Black students in African American Studies need an academic advisor at a moment like this, you do not deserve your job, in my opinion.
I think that's a fair opinion to have. So what are steps that community members, a lot of the people listening to West, they're not university students, they're just members of the surrounding community. And so what are things that we can do to help the Black students of our community? Any action that we can take or any way that we can support Black United Front?
For sure, for sure. Well, if your listeners are listening closely, I just want to say that, you know, any help that y'all can give us in regards to this issue will be greatly appreciated. And as far as what you can do, one, you know, during the week, you know, you can come visit us at the Department of African American Studies. Because of the incompetent leadership there, we have begun a sit-in to raise awareness. So please come visit us. Also, find us on social media, Twitter and Instagram. Names are All Black UIUC, A-L-L, Black UIUC. But also, if you want to take a harder stance and, you know, maybe some support more directly, I'd ask that you please contact some of the pivotal administrators and department heads that are involved with the preservation of the academic advisor position in the department and the preservation of Mr. Lutoner's job. Those people would be Dr. Camargo, the Associate Dean of LAS. You can reach him at 217-244-7717. Again, 217-244-7717. And also you can reach Dr. Ronald Bailey, the department head at the Department of African American Studies. You can reach him at 217-333-7781. And if you didn't catch those numbers, you need any type of information, again, just holler at us at the social media, All Black UIUC, or you can search Black United Front UIUC on Facebook and find us there.
Well, awesome. I really appreciate all the work that you're putting into this. And, you know, because I generally believe that what you're doing, it will make the University of Illinois a better institution, which will in turn make Champaign-Urbana a better community. So, once again, thank you so much. And thank you for your time today.
Oh, yeah. And that's our ultimate goal. You know, let's make this community stronger, you know, on and off campus. You know, let's make those connections. So, shout out to your listeners. You know, much love. And thank you for the interview.
All right. Thank you. And, I'm sure I'll see you around, and once again, thank you for your time.
Okay, do you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name is Niti Shah, and I am the membership chair for ASHA for Education, but for Holi, I am the volunteer chair.
Hi, I'm Kapil Dave. I'm Holi coordinator. I'm working with ASHA for 2 years now.
Okay. Wow, yeah, that's great. And did you just start?
I've been part of ASHA for the past year.
Okay, nice. What are your, are you a graduate student?
Yeah, I'm a PhD in physics.
Okay.
And I'm an undergraduate student in political science and economics.
How did you guys get involved with ASHA?
Yeah, for me, ASHA came up to be like a natural thing because in India I was volunteering for an organization similar to what ASHA is doing here.
Okay.
So when I came here, I was looking for some places where I could get involved. So ASHA came to me naturally, and then with friends I got to know about ASHA, and from there I've been part of ASHA since then.
That's great. What about you?
So I actually went to the Office of Volunteer Programs, the little thing that they had going on, a little convention or something in the union.
Yeah,
it was last year, so 2015 fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually spoke to two members from the organization, and they like told me about like what their mission is, what they're trying to do, some events that people can get involved in, and just like the amount of leadership opportunities that they had for, you know, helping out with the group and everything. So yeah,
great. So yeah, just for our listeners, what does ASHA for Education do? What's your mission?
So the mission for ASHA is to empower students who in India who have a lack of educational resources. So there are three projects in India right now. I don't know exactly all three different
places.
Yeah,
it's mostly northern part, which is Rajasthan. And then to the central part, we have Madhya Pradesh, and then down south, we have Tamil Nadu.
Great.
The three projects we're considering ASHA to give donations to organizations like Prayas in India, will help empower kids who don't have privileges for education, mostly from slum areas or from rural areas where they don't have schools.
Okay. And one of our schools, actually, one of the projects that we're helping funding is helping kids with mental disabilities. So that's also a really cool benefit that ASHA's getting involved in.
Yeah, that's great. So what do you guys do, like, day to day? What are the events that you have besides the Holi Festival, you know? What are you really trying to do?
So, like, we have a couple of big events which we do. Like, every monthly or bi-monthly, we do Sambar, which is a student-run kitchen, we'll
okay.
say. So people volunteer to cook certain amount of Indian dishes, which
okay.
Which we sell out at Red Herring.
Okay.
And we try to raise money from that event. And then Holi is our main event, which we do to get funds. And several small projects which we collaborate with other organizations and others on campus to raise money.
Okay.
Like Chart on Cord is also one of the
okay.
small things which we do
yeah.
to get and raise money for.
I've heard about some of those things. I haven't heard about the thing at the Red Herring, though. So.
Yeah. We're also helping with the Illinois Marathon. We're running with the, we're sponsoring some of our runs to run for the Illinois Marathon. So that's pretty cool as well.
Do you have a team?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm running the 10K.
Okay.
This time.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
So I'm just curious, you know, how many members does ASHA have?
I want to say that there are around 15 to 20 members.
Okay.
For each project, people are more involved or less involved. It just kind of depends on what your area is and what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So for like Sambar, there are coordinators who are more involved with that, but when Holi comes around, they kind of just like are there, but not really.
Right.
They're just there to support, but not really like helping with the project. Like,
okay.
We are like 15, 20 team of like board members and like members who have been assigned a certain job to be done,
mm-hmm.
but we get volunteers from DKD, we get volunteers from other sororities
okay.
to brings out to be in Holi itself, we have like 70 plus volunteers on field helping us to get that event done. But on the core, we would say like we will have 15, 20 members.
Okay. Are there volunteers too, or are they just like the members?
They're external volunteers.
Okay.
So, I mean, all of our board members are technically we're all volunteers.
Yeah.
But we don't have a volunteer base. We have like external like organizations that help us.
So is that mostly just on campus, or you guys, is it like part of the community too, where you have volunteers who are helping you?
I mean, we are open to everybody,
okay.
but mostly like we get outreach to just students and like graduate, undergraduate students here, but we are most welcome to have anybody from the community also join us. Like
right.
we have several older members in our organization who are helping us, like with packing colors. We need some space, so
right.
people are providing that space for us, and also like people are helping us in our events, which are part of the community.
Okay. Like personally, I've experienced now. I'm a junior and
mm-hmm.
I've gone to the Holi Festival. 3 years, I would say it's like a pretty successful event.
Yeah.
You know, is that your more successful event?
Yeah.
Do you think? Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. And so, how do you guys go about? I know you use social media, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Is that? Would you find that to be most successful to get the word out?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
So social media is a really good way to target like every single audience, except for like townies and such.
Right.
But like the graduate and undergraduate students. We also use a lot of posters around,
yeah.
like, everywhere. We try to put everything
yeah.
everywhere. So that's a really good way to, like, give people, like, a sense that something's going on. And that posters actually help really well with, like, people who are in the community, because we put them up in various locations, like restaurants or stores, so if someone pops by and they see, like, oh, there's this event going on, they're more aware of the event.
So this time, like, just to add on,
yeah.
this time we went to Urbana downtown and the Lincoln Square Mall.
Right.
So to reach more people from the community, from the town, and like distributed our posters in local restaurants where we can find out more people from the community to join the event which we are doing.
Yeah.
So not just on the campus, but we are going off campus as well to
yeah.
reach out more people from the community.
Do you find that it attracts mostly students or like people on campus? Okay.
For sure, yeah.
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 I would say there are a lot of people off campus who go as
yeah.
well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear like every other student on campus talking about it, so it's definitely very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And do you guys work with ISA?
So ISA is usually one of the organizations that helps provide volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
But due to conflict issues, because they have their Indian Night
yeah.
event going on the same day as Holi, it wouldn't make sense for them to come help us out. But we do have a good bond with them. They do help us out every year, basically.
Awesome. That's great. So, two questions. How long has ASHA been established on campus?
I would say at least 10 to 12 years.
Okay.
But that's on a lower bound, I would say.
Okay.
So it would be more than 12 years, but I would say definitely 12 years we have been here at UIUC, but the organization overall would be more than 25 years across U.S.
Okay.
Various different campuses.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But was the Holi Festival like something that's kind of recent, or has that been there for a while now?
From my experience, at least 6 years back, we have been celebrating Holi, and I think this is a main event which every campus, like various different universities at U.S. has been doing.
Right.
And we have been doing as part of ASHA just to help the community as well as to get fundraising for the school.
Okay. So what makes ASHA important to both of you? Like, you know, why do you enjoy being part of it? I hope that you enjoy being part of it, yeah.
So I'll speak first.
Yeah.
So for me, like, ever since I was growing up, like, my parents always told me, like, the value that an education has and that how privileged I am as a firstborn in America to be attending university school and just gaining all this sort of knowledge that a lot of people don't have access to in the world.
Right.
So those constant reminders always, like, sometimes I take them for granted naturally because, like, I've been only exposed to one sort of thing in my entire life, right? But when I heard about ASHA for Education's mission, when I was talking to the two ladies during the Office of the Volunteer Program thing, like, you could see how much passion they had about the group and what they were doing. And I thought that that was a good way for me to connect with my roots and just to, you know, be supportive of the fact that, like, there are people who aren't as lucky as I am.
For me, I've seen it with my eyes. So I've seen kids from the slums. I've seen kids at the construction sites. They have no privileges to have any kind of education, like forget about food. They don't have like normal basic utilities which we have. So as when I started, we started giving night classes to these kids so that they can get at least some kind of an understanding of what's going around, what they have. So we started out with basic education and then registering them to like schools where people are like giving them free education.
Right.
So they didn't even have that resources. And then I came up here, I wanted to do the same. Being connected back home in India to help the kids get education. So ASHA is special to me because all the funds 100% goes to the kids.
Right.
There's nothing that ASHA keeps within. That's very important for me. So as it's very transparent, we know that whatever we are putting effort goes directly to the kids and help them. And in fact, many of the places people go back to India and see this organization being worked and the money being flowed into prayers or some other organization which are close to, which I've been knowing while working with some NGOs. So that's really good part of being with ASHA and satisfying.
Yeah, that's great. In ASHA, how many members do you know of that like celebrate Holi culturally?
I can speak for the American-born members, and I can tell you that probably most of them haven't really experienced a cultural Holi. I can tell you that before coming to college, I never experienced Holi, so last year was my first Holi.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was a really cool experience. I don't know how it is in India, though, but basically for people in, like who grew up in America, like you don't really get to see anything like that.
Right.
For me, like Holi is like a festival of joy. I mean, I was missing that part when I came up to U.S. I was missing the festivals, the festivity which it brings, the joy and the love which people share on these occasions. So being part of ASHA and organizing Holi gives me that pleasure of what's going on home simultaneously at that point of time. So I would say maybe all the Indian-born and the graduate students will have definitely experienced the real Holi which happens in India.
Yeah.
A part of it which we are trying to bring it, the culture we are trying to bring through ASHA on campus. I'm glad that's happening at least.
So I know for myself, I'm like a second generation as well. Like I never grew up celebrating the religious portion of Holi, or I never really paid attention to it, but I knew what it was culturally. Would you ever consider bringing a religious aspect to it, or, you know, explaining to the people, trying to find a way to get them involved in that as well? Do you think it's
reasonable?
I think it's important to highlight that there is a religious aspect to it, and its roots do go back to, like, different Indian myths and Hindu, like, you know, mythology and stuff like that. But I will say that, like,
we won't like to impose it, though, on people.
Right.
But usually many people who are interested come up and ask, why are you celebrating this? And I would be happy to give them explanation of why we would like to do Holi and what is the reason of throwing colors and having joy with your family members, with your friends, why this is like more of a colorful festival to us. It's the beginning of spring for us.
Yeah.
And that's how back home we celebrate Holi. And the religious aspect is always there, but it's not necessarily to be imposed on people. But if they come up and ask, we definitely would be happy to share that information with them.
Which is why the way that we advertise with Holi is it's like the color run without the run. Like,
okay.
There's no, how are you supposed to, like, tell people who aren't aware of Hinduism and, like, the different holidays we have? How do we portray, like, you know, depict what it actually is, you know, without imposing that religious aspect. So that's kind of how we have to advertise it. We're definitely open to it, but it's really difficult to, you know, have that balance.
Right. Mm-hmm. Also, like, Hinduism isn't very, it's, you know, they're really not, like, Hindu missionaries.
Yeah.
We're not, like, trying to convert or anything. So the most important aspect of the festival is, to Asha would be, you know, what would that be?
For us, it's more to bring the community together.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we are thinking of. We are thinking of showing us our culture, but also bringing the community together, bringing our friends together, celebrate, bring a reason to smile, to throw colors, and enjoy themselves at that event for 4 or 5 hours.
Right.
Get out that stress that they're feeling through finals week or whatever assignments they have up to.
It's really about showcasing the different, like, people, like, diversity we have on campus. Diversity in terms of, like, obviously ethnic diversity, but also in terms of talent. Like, we have different performers, but they're not just Indian people performing. We have, you know, an Indian-born artist who's performing rap music, which really shows that, you know, cultures can assimilate, and it's really cool to see how much diversity this campus and this community has.
Yeah, that's great. And if they want to follow you on social media, where can they follow you?
We have a Facebook page, as mentioned before. It's just Asha for Education, UIUC. You should just find and you can follow it. So you can learn about some of the events that we have coming up, like, throughout the year and stuff like that. So it's a good way to be involved with our organization.
You have been listening to CU Progressive News. The views and opinions have been solely those of the speakers, not of the sponsors, collaborators, station management, staff, or board of directors.
Well, and that just ended awfully abruptly, didn't it? You are listening to WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on the FM dial, streaming live at weft.org. And that was this week's edition of CU Progressive News. And we will have the Union Edge coming up in just a few minutes. I wanted to fill you in on a couple of public service announcements. WEFT and Feeding Our Kids are launching into summer with a Soundhouse concert at Riggs Beer Company to raise funds for Feeding Our Kids and WEFT. Funds raised will help support the elimination of hunger and food insecurity for kids in our community and help to maintain community radio in East Central Illinois. This event takes place May 22nd from 6 to 9 p.m. Riggs is located at 1901 South High Cross Road in Urbana. Performers include local acts Flaccid and Mike Ingram of New Souls. Also, DJ Maggie Maru will DJ the event. This event is an opportunity to support your community, enjoy some tunes, and make new friends. For more information and a link to a reduced price pre-sale ticket, head to the event page at facebook.com/weftcommunityradio. Also, tonight at Clark Bar, there'll be a WEFT Grateful Dead Hour benefit concert and silent auction by the Grateful Dead tribute band Sunshine Daydream, and featuring items from David Gann's For Sale at the Silent, and featuring items from David Gann's. And there'll be plenty of items available at Silent Auction. Again, that's at the Clark Bar tonight, the 29th, from 9:30 till 1 o'clock in the morning. Donations will support WEFT Champaign Grateful Dead Hour. And we're going to get an underwriting announcement on, and then we'll be right up with this week's edition of the Union Edge.
This hour of programming is brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Canopy Club, the downstate Illinois home for live music, entertainment, and nightlife. The Canopy Club offers luxury seating and table service for partygoers wanting a VIP experience.